Hello, everyone. Welcome to Fighters and Riders. You're here with Alvin Carter, Rich Hansen, Ryan McDermott, and Danny Alexis. Today, we're going to focus on Japanese MMA. I'm sure we all have a lot to say, and the listeners might have a lot to say, too. So please make sure you comment on this post and get some feedback. And if anyone has any compelling arguments, we might be able to get you on here next time to hear what you have to say. So for the first sound off here, we're going to talk to, let's see, Rich, what do you have to say?
Well, there's an ongoing debate between the super, super hardcore fans out there as to whether Japanese MMA is dead, dying, in remission, what exactly is going on with Japanese MMA. Japanese MMA is extremely creative. When you watch a fight, you're more likely to see grapple chokes, darce chokes, various chokes that you never see in the UFC because the higher level of competition also means a higher level of defense. So if you're a super hardcore fan, Japan is the place to go to see stuff that you've never seen before. But part of the reason you're seeing it is because the level of fighting in Japan isn't as high as it is here in the States.
Definitely. I would definitely agree with the concept of the defense level being, that's something to look at there. If you get caught in certain, I was thinking of the Musashi fight, June 15, even though neither of them were Japanese, but, you know, to be caught in a guillotine choke that quickly, Jake O'Brien must feel really, really bad. But, okay, next. Next, Ryan.
Tonight, I'm going to be sounding off about Shinya Aoki. While I am one of the big supporters of Japanese MMA, is not dead, but yet stuck in the evolution mode, I think he is one fighter that very specifically has found a niche for himself that he refuses to get out of. You see that the Kenny Florians and people like the GSPs who are going well out of their way to make themselves as well-rounded a fighter as they can be, going to different camps all across the world. Shinya Aoki shows time and time again he has absolutely zero interest in standing up with anybody. He had one fight a couple months ago where I think he did it only because the mass media was calling him out, and I think to see him submit Kawajiri in this last Dream 15 was A, nothing less than a surprise, and B, pretty boring. I think to bring him over to the U.S. would be nothing short of exposure of a guy like that.
Ooh, there you go. I guess Aoki's on notice. All right. My sound off is how, while Japanese MMA can be considered to be in all different types of periods, whether it's the death, the evolution, the importance of Dynamite 2009 and Dream versus Sengoku, those bouts were very important for the Japanese MMA community and the hardcore fans. While there were some surprises, and then there were plenty of, you know, just upsetting scenarios like Aoki, you know, breaking Masato Hirota's arm for no apparent reason and then flipping out, and then later saying a demon possessed him and he couldn't control it. That's very upsetting. But besides that, there was retirement matches, and it was just something to really take in. It kind of, to me, gave Japanese MMA a little more life, even though since then people can argue either way. I definitely think it was a scenario where we saw fighters really put everything out there, and the best in one nation fought the best in another nation. That's something that we generally don't have happen in the UFC because promotions aren't as eager to work together. But let's go off of Rich's point first off. So, according to your sound off, what is the main problem?
Well, the main problem with Japanese MMA right now, other than all of the politics and the Yakuza scandal killing off Pride, you know, just in the ring itself, the level of competition there is nowhere near as high as it is in the U.S., you know, specifically the UFC, but also Strikeforce, Bellator, et cetera. I think, coming from a non-fighting standpoint, the main reason is the complete lack of wrestling, complete lack of weight cutting in Japan. Also, you don't see a whole lot of Japanese fighters fighting in the higher weight classes. The bigger Japanese fighters that you see, Yushin Akami, for instance, you know, walks around 205, cuts down to 185, has a wrestling base, and he's probably the most successful Japanese wrestler or Japanese mixed martial artist in the world right now, depending on what you think of Aoki. But he was kind of exposed 2 months ago, 3 months ago, in Nashville. So I think it's the fact that the sport is evolving right now to where you need skills that don't come across as important in Japan, and they're going to need to pick up on those.
Got you. Yeah, that's definitely, I definitely see that. It's all about seeing what you don't have and acquiring it in a way that fits into what you already do. And I think that leads into Rich's sound off about how people need to go out of their way to really become a world-class fighter rather than sticking to, you know, your grappling pants and a couple of hammer locks. You want to talk about that, Rich?
Well,
sorry, not Rich. I meant to say Ryan. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it's just sad to see the guy. I'm assuming you're referring to Aoki.
Yeah.
The guy is obviously so dominant, and you watch so many other people coming up through the Japanese ranks right now that are really becoming so much more well-rounded with every outing that they have, you know, every month. And Aoki's doing the same thing over and over and over again. And then you see him in the top 10 ranking, and it's like, how can you possibly put him in the top 10 ranking? Like, if you put him in with, you know, a really dominant wrestler or a guy who's got really great top position in pound and pound, Aoki would be smashed. I mean, look at what Melendez did to him. I mean, and that wasn't even a good outing for Melendez. I mean, you put him, I wouldn't even put Melendez in the top 10. You put Aoki in front of a real top 10 guy from the U.S., and he's going to get destroyed. But like I said before, like, I agree with Rich. I don't think Japanese MMA is dead. It certainly does not go for the wealth of talent that they have at that weight over there. To have a respect for the sport, and I think to really hold a respectful position over a top 10 ranking, you would really have to make the conscious effort to go out and become more well-rounded, and I don't think that's something that he's interested in doing.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't seem that way. He definitely seems comfortable. And then, you know, I hate to make this comparison, but, you know, you don't want to become the Mark Coleman of your nation's MMA. You can do one thing well, but when it doesn't work, what do you do? And I do think Aoki was riding the wave of beating Eddie Alvarez back at Dynamite 2008, because Eddie Alvarez was really supposed to dominate with more of an American vicious ground and pound style. And, you know, Eddie Alvarez is a beast, but, you know, got caught in the heel hook, so there's nothing you could do there. And I think from there on, no matter what happened, Aoki was really given leeway, because all his fights continue to be, you know, in Japan. And then when you do get to Nashville, like you said, Melendez, we've seen Melendez look a lot better than that, and he kept Aoki at bay. And it's just a very interesting concept of how strong you can be in a certain area, and that doesn't become enough. And that's in MMA in general, overall in the sport. I know we got two fighters on the line here. I know that you're constantly trying to get your game up to par, but let me throw this out to anyone who wants to answer. Do you think that having people like Aoki and Kawajiri in general come to the U.S. and train with folks like, you know, would it benefit them to train with Jake Shields or Randy Couture? I mean, it doesn't matter the weight class, just get some of that. Or would it be a great vacation, a little learning, but do you think it would really translate into their training because of, you know, who they work with when they actually are at home?
I definitely think it would be a benefit. I mean, just not to continually go back to Kenny Florian, but right after he went to Thailand, he came back and put on a Muay Thai clinic. There are so many guys in this country that go over to Thailand to learn, to engage, and to really take that wealth of knowledge, bring it back, and execute. And I think anybody who would make the effort to come over here and do that, to learn, you know, the Greco and freestyle wrestling at, you know, an Extreme Couture from all the wealth of wrestlers down there or anywhere else across the Midwest. I mean, those guys would absolutely be able to implement that, but you have to be willing to get on a plane and, you know, submit yourself to two-a-days in a wrestling atmosphere. But it's not something he's ever showed interest in doing.
I would be right on that point, as in, one of the biggest problems is that I see with Japanese MMA is that these guys don't really look like they have their conditioning. And wrestlers always have conditioning. And it's a Japanese thing, you know, kind of a little Asian culture thing to not really put yourself out there for, you know, for a chance to look to look a little weak. But you have to do that if you're a fighter. If you're a fighter, this is coming from a fighter, you have to get in the ring with somebody that's better than you, because you never want to be the best person in your club. You always want to have room to improve. And I think in Japanese MMA, they have a lot of room to improve when it comes to conditioning and wrestling.
Yeah, that actually can be seen with, you know, how Sexyama was gassed out. And, you know, whereas Leben, we expect Leben to be gassed out and not there. I mean, you guys probably know he thought he won in the second round. So he was out of it for majority of that fight, which is ridiculous. But yeah, that conditioning can be something. Whereas I do think that is actually the one thing that can be worked on wherever you are. That's something that I think, you know, you don't even have to go to the States unless you're looking for a specific ethic you're not finding wherever you may be located. But I wanted to go on my sound off about the willingness of the two promotions, Sengoku and Dream, to actually collaborate. I do think that that's very important, and I think that while there's different styles within your nation, I think there's different styles within the organizations. And it's definitely, you know, as already it's already been mentioned, the lighter weights tend to prevail. And I do think that if these promotions can work together and pool heavyweight talent, they might be able to really get something going if the heavyweight talent is got just some more of an impact. You know, I'm not expecting to see world-class wrestlers pop up and, you know, the stand-up to become magnificent. But when you have, you know, anybody over 205 in a ring and they bang. And that's what fans actually want to see. So I do think it would be interesting just to see if, you know, Dynamite 2010, if they really pooled together any heavyweight talent. Because on their own, I do not think they could find enough to really populate any division above, you know, middleweight with actually Japanese fighters. I do know you can find a light heavyweight bout with Gegard Mousasi any day of the week. I, you know, part of me wants to think he didn't want his title so he can be free to fight better in Japan than he does in Strikeforce. But, Rich, what do you think about that?
I don't know why there aren't a whole lot of higher-weight Japanese fighters. I know that Ishii got exposed in his first fight, or it was against Yoshida, correct? Kind of the young bear supposed to be replacing the legend, and the legend took him out. And I don't really know the answer or enough about the culture over there to explain that. I do know that there's not enough talent to support both Sengoku and Dream right now. And they better start collaborating more than just on New Year's Eve if they want to survive a whole hell of a lot longer than they're on pace to right now.
Yes, that's definitely, that is true, because, you know, a number of the folks that traditionally fought for them are finding themselves, you know, the ones that can are finding themselves sticking to America. And usually the namesakes for these fights are American or Dutch fighters, occasionally a Brazilian fighter. It also brings me to a quick Dream 15 note. You know, I want to call it the super sad ballad of Melvin Manhoff. You know, I thought that was a great fight, but I feel like, you know, he keeps going. You know, he fights K1, he'll fight in Dream, and he just can't get a showing. What do you guys think about folks purposely going to Japan to fight and not showing well, and, you know, how that translates, seeing how people already think that MMA is subpar there? How do you translate that to if they were to come to the States? Do you think that is performances or anyone in that scenario would perform just as poorly here in the States?
I don't know if I'd use Manhoff as an example. I mean, if you really have followed that guy within the last year, he fights a lot. I mean, between Dream or K1, I mean, he probably gets upwards of six fights a year. I mean, he's in there a lot, and he did not look like himself this last fight. He looked, I mean, usually he's completely ripped and doesn't have an ounce of fat on him, but and to say that he looked a little flabby might be a bit of an exaggeration, but he didn't look like his normal in shape, ready to, you know, eat somebody's children kind of shape that he goes into the ring with. And he got caught with something that he wouldn't have got caught with normally. And I mean, especially given the last few performances that he's had in the K1 Grand Prix stuff. But I don't know. I don't think he's a bad example or a good example to use in that situation.
Well, really, he's not a good example to use because he's not a mixed martial artist. He's a kickboxer who dabbles. And
I agree.
Than that,
absolutely.
So on that, I agree with you. But the rest of it, he looked exactly like what Melvin Manhoef is. Ferocious standing up, horrible on the ground. And this was the most typical Melvin Manhoef fight you're ever going to see, where he's dominant on the ground, and he's a kitty cat. And then the ref stood the fight back up after he almost got his right arm ripped off of his body, or his left arm ripped off his body twice, and then gets back up on the feet, gets wrestled down, and he got dominated again. It was textbook Manhoef. It was as Manhoefian as Manhoefian can possibly be.
See, I agree with that, and I can see where you might not think he's a great example, but for someone who dabbles, he's got a lot of fights in under MMA as well. We could all say, hey, look at Krokop. You know, Krokop is a kickboxer. But he fights MMA because I see, he's lost his two so far this year. He fought two times 2009, fought probably about four or maybe five times 2008, six or seven times. So I do get the volume. So he's a warrior. He goes out there. But this guy fights, and he predominantly fights in Japan. It's either a dream event or a K1 event that features MMA, or it's a Dynamite. So, to say he's not the right example, I wonder. I mean, he sure is putting time over there. He's putting in a lot of time over there, and to not have progressed past being, like you said, fierce stand-up and something on the ground, I wonder, should he even, then if he's not really supposed to be fighting MMA, should he? But we can put him aside and say any example of that. And if you have a specific one that comes to mind, but what do you think about Americans or anyone actually from anywhere in general going to Japan and not showing well? And does that make a statement for how they'll fare in the U.S., or do you think it might even hinder their appearance in a top promotion in the U.S.? Rich?
You can go over to Japan and look really good. Ask Marius Zaranskis, ask Gegard Mousasi, and then you come to America and you don't. If you can't control where the fight goes with wrestling, you're not going to succeed here. It's 90% of the time just that simple. And it's a matter of that skill becoming implemented in Japan. And as long as it's not in Japan, you can win over there. But you come over here, you don't have wrestling, you don't have the ability to at least step a wrestler, you aren't going to win consistently.
Danny, what do you think?
I think as a stand-up style, he's good, but like, Rich just said that when he comes across a wrestler, it's not going to work. And I think it is going to hinder his chances of getting, let's say, a UFC contract or a Strikeforce contract or even a Bellator contract. Because, here we like to stand and bang. We like to watch that. And then, we also like to watch an all-around game. But, we really love to stand and bang. You got to stand and bang part down, but the all-around game he needs to work on.
Yeah, I'd say so, because, maybe there's just a thing with kickboxers in the ground, because, I go back to Krokop's ridiculous submission over Pat Barry. That was actually hilarious, but at the same time, how could you not root for that? That's a success right there.
Exactly.
Krokop's another example of ferocious success in Japan, but not nearly as effective here because he doesn't have a wrestling base at all in his game. I mean, he's got a good sprawl, but once it's down, he's done.
True story. Yeah, that's pretty much about where it stops for him. And I was going to ask, Ryan, being you train Muay Thai, Chinese kickboxing, and I believe MMA, what do you think is actually the base for most fighters that you come across in MMA that you work with right now? Would you say wrestling is the base, or is it jiu-jitsu, or just a survey of your personal experience?
Well, I mean, I think it's taken its own little progression. I mean, if you were to ask anybody what is the basis of a fight, and anybody off the street, they would tell you, punching or kicking. So I think it started as Muay Thai became the base, and then I think it evolved to Jiu-Jitsu, and now I think it's wrestling. It took me a long time to realize that because coming from a stand-up background, it's kind of a hard pill to swallow. But I think just even the work ethic those guys have and where they come from, that's not that the stand-up guys don't have that, but it's different. It's not the same. I think the way that they put weight on and hold weight on and get used to cutting is a huge thing for professional MMA right now. Something obviously we just touched on. There's no real cutting in Japan. Except, you got a couple of the freaks over there. But I definitely think wrestling is it for the moment. But, at the same time, give it 2 years and it could become a cycle. I mean, it could just be transitioning from style to style. No, I wouldn't be surprised if that would happen.
Yeah, definitely. That's, as a number of you on this show have said, everything's cyclical.
I would agree with Ryan up until a point. Wrestling is just another aspect of fighting. Even Muay Thai has its wrestling with its clinch. I've rarely encountered a style that doesn't have some particular type of wrestling. But as for MMA, and wrestling as a whole in MMA, wrestling is very important. Wrestling allows you to get the dominant position. But striking is very important because if you put a pure wrestler in front of a pure striker, which was the original idea of the UFC, you really wouldn't know who would win. If the striker could stand there and bang him out, he'd win. If the wrestler can come get him, he'd win. That's just what it is, and that's why you need to work on everything all around, which is another reason why Japanese MMA hasn't evolved to that point where they can compete with the
UFC. I agree with you. That's not necessarily the point I was trying to make. I wasn't trying to say it was the most important. I think it's the strongest of the three bases. I mean, I think if you look at the top guys right now, they're coming from wrestling backgrounds. I mean, perfect example, look at Brock. I mean, I hate to use him as an example, but I mean, it shows what it does for people. The results are in the
place.
There's Brock Lesnar, there's Shane Carwin, you got Cain Velasquez. I mean, you could go down the line there. And then, anyone else generally in the heavyweight division, UFC, they have jiu-jitsu and they've worked on their wrestling. And so, yeah, the ground game, I guess, is definitely, because this is the thing with striking. If you have effective striking, you may not knock someone out right away, but you get them on the ground. And then what do? You let them stand back up. You get down and you dominate. So I want to look at one more fighter who tends to spend a lot of time in Japan and finally came to, prove themselves. It's Alistair Overeem. Now, Alistair Overeem enjoys K-1 more than MMA, seeing how, he won the Strikeforce title and didn't defend it for nearly 2 years. So that's pretty interesting. And he was so dominant over there. Do you think that his dominance, besides him just being a good athlete and, participated in Pride, and, even though he's had some strange runs in Pride, he had that time where he had three losses to Little Nog, Ricardo Arona, and Shogun, which, all real opponents, and this was in 2006, so this is when they could fight for real. But do you think that his overall dominance that we're starting to see back stateside, especially with Brett Rogers, do you think he got any more tools from fighting over in Japan, or do you think this was just him, reliving his Pride time and pushing forward a little more? Because he really, he tossed Brett Rogers to the ground, and I just was surprised to see that.
I think he is one of the very few guys that hasn't fought exclusively in the U.S. for a long time that has seen a lot of really good competition. He's a bit of an anomaly, kind of outside Fedor, but he's seen a lot of some pretty stand-up and worthy opponents. And which is really why I want to see him fight Fedor, because I think he'd absolutely smash him. And it was actually kind of surprising to me that he passed all the drug tests and everything, given how puffed up he's gotten in the last, 5 or 6 years. If you look back and see pictures of what he looked like when he fought Chuck Liddell, it looks like a totally different person. But I guess he likes the weights.
Yeah,
he looks like he's drawn out from cutting, from being 6'5", cutting down from 240 to get to a weight limit that he shouldn't have been fighting at for, you know, since 2004. So he looks the way he's supposed to look while pounding the gym like crazy, because he's not 6'1", like a lot of 205ers. He's 6'5", minimum.
Yeah. He's just massive. But the biggest critique is on how he has a giant head and his neck is medic, and that is scary. Exactly. It's like his shoulders and his head. I think it's a cartoon drawing, but, you know, he can smash you, as Ryan said, so more power to him. Man, I try to give all fighters I hope they don't test. I try to assume not, because, I mean, depending on your training. But, you know, Josh Barnett just messed that up for me. He's like, let me go out the country where I can get away with more. So, you know, if you are out of the States and you're fighting and all of a sudden you look juiced, there's a pretty good chance you might be. So, all right. So, Rich, I'm going to toss this to you as we're getting ready to close. And I want everyone to chime in on it as well. What do you think, besides the overall concept of needing to evolve and needing to work on wrestling, what do you think is the biggest thing that, or should I say not the biggest, what country do you think has the most to offer currently stylistically to Japanese MMA? Because fighters could definitely go, as Ryan said, to the Midwest and, you know, really learn how to wrestle. Jiu-Jitsu is definitely there, but Jiu-Jitsu is always being modified and depends which Gracie you study under, depends what you're taking away. And the stand-up is definitely lacking. I mean, do you need to send some folks to Thailand? Do some people need to go to, you know, the stand-up all over the world? Do you have any idea besides wrestling, any other skill set that should be more refined or possibly added?
Well, it's keeping in mind I'm not a fighter. That's why you have Danny on the show, and I'm not an instructor, which is why we have Ryan on the show. What I see is that the most dominant ground fighters in the world might be the lighter weight Japanese fighters. I mean, the ninja choke that Kaptamura put on Ueda at Shudo back in May, I've never seen it. It was a Bravo Ninja Power Guillotine choke from mount. It was unreal. It was completely backwards with a crazy setup. They have dominant ground fighters, and it's because it gets drilled into them from a young age. It's the jiu-jitsu at the expense of everything else. And I fear it might be a generational thing, that a whole, you know, like what we talked about on our last show, where Rory McDonald has come up training in everything. The cross-training, it's not anything that, from what I can tell, that you can pick up at age 25. You don't all of a sudden say, hey, I'm going to study boxing for 6 months and Muay Thai for 6 months, and then I'll be able to hang with anyone and be completely well-rounded. It doesn't usually work that way unless you're Kenny Florian. You know, there's not a quick solution to making the Japanese fighters as well-rounded as the fighters in the U.S., Canada, Brazil. It's just not going to happen overnight.
Gotcha. Danny, what do you think?
I think that, you know, I agree. It can't happen overnight. These are skill sets that you have to turn into instincts. I think, as he said, the ground fighting is really dominant. Boxing needs a lot of work. I mean, like, as a fighter, I would just say pick 2-3 things, make 4 or 5 combinations off those things and work those things, you know, with some kicks. Because the kicking seems to be pretty decent. But their boxing, their hands to their feet and their feet to their hands, needs a lot of work because it really would set them up to do a lot more.
Gotcha. Ryan.
Well, I mean, I think just like it took a while become so evident here that you need to come up well-rounded, I think it's going to take a while to happen there. I mean, with a country that is so steeped in tradition and traditional martial arts and the time given to one aspect of fighting, I think that might be a hindrance to them realizing what needs to happen there. I mean, I think the top of the rung gets it, and they're doing a bit of cross-training now, and, you know, those top guys are going to remain the top guys.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for listening, and we definitely want to get you all in on the discussion at some point. So feel free to give a shout-out to us, and we will see you in 2 weeks with maybe a little more wrap-up on Japan, and, well, we got a little surprise for you. Take care, everyone.